Welcome to the Buckmaster Show. My name is Ray Allen, filling in for Bill Buckmaster, who is on the final leg of his vacation now, probably. Going to be coming back into the Tucson area this weekend. So, one more time, I get to fill in for him. Dan Shear will be here tomorrow with the Friday Roundtable. Ed, thanks for filling in on that side of the glass. Cool show for you today. Two guests like last week. We're going to be talking with Daniel Grossenbach. He's a postal inspector, so we'll be talking about what goes into really inspecting your mail and how you can protect yourself from getting fraud and all that stuff. So that'll be fun starting at 12:30. Right now, we're going to talk about something that's interesting to me, and I hope it's interesting to you as well. And that's going to be kind of Tucson and the history of Tucson in the 50s, 60s, and maybe even some of the 70s and before a little bit, because it all kind of goes together. I'm joined now by Julie Areola, the museum curator at the Arizona History Museum downtown. Thank you so much for being on the show, and welcome.
Thank you, Ray. Great to be here.
Yeah. Now tell me, you work at the downtown Tucson History Museum, correct?
Yes, I do.
And there's how many actual museums in Tucson that people can go to?
There are four branches. Actually, there's three branches. There's the main museum, which is 9492nd Street. There's Fort Lowell. There's the Sosa Carrillo Fremont House, and then there's the downtown museum.
Oh, okay, very neat. And I went to the downtown museum. I think it was last summer, and it was fascinating. It was much bigger than I anticipated it being.
Mm-hmm. People really like it. There's that you can really get a sense of the development of downtown, and there's these beautiful, beautiful murals and photos. They just tell it all.
Yeah, of course. And do you still have the model of the barber shop there? Still open?
Okay. We do.
What year is that from?
Oh, I believe that's 30s or 40s. I'm not
30s
absolutely
or 40s.
Sure. It goes up. It goes earlier as well.
Okay.
Because of generations.
It's pretty neat because you can basically go almost be in this barber shop room that was from that era, and it's fascinating. Kind of
mm-hmm.
cool.
Yeah, it was an actual barber shop that was in town.
Where was that located?
Not sure.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Cool. Well, it's definitely fun. But I did want to talk about Tucson in kind of the mid-century period, so of the 20th century. So what we'll probably end up doing is talking about some of the history. And then in the second segment, if you out there in the listening audience want to call in and talk about this, we'll open up the phones to you to call in and talk. The number is 790-2040. 790-2040, but the first segment probably going to just stick to talking about all this. So one of the things that I was interested in when it comes to Tucson is people migrating across the United States, really, to Tucson because of its weather, and in particular for health reasons. And the reason I bring this up is because on both sides of my family, both my mother and father's side, health was a determining factor for what brought people to Tucson. Have you noticed that is a major kind of storyline throughout Tucson's history?
I do, because it started out with people coming here because of tuberculosis, because of the dry climate.
All right.
So that started out right away.
Yeah. And so what year was that the people started coming for tuberculosis?
20s or 30s.
20s or 30s. And you were saying to me off the air that St. Mary's developed
yes.
out of that?
Yes, that's what they started out as.
Uh-huh. Okay, as a tuberculosis
yeah,
clinic.
Yeah, they had a tubercular ward.
Uh-huh. Wow, that's fascinating. Now, on my side of the family, there was lung cancer, and then there was also asthma as a reason for why people would want to move out here. Talk to me a little bit about migration within the United States, maybe from east to west, as people moved, even post-World War II, over to this area. What was happening that was
Well, I think you
causing
said it,
that?
You named it right off. It was right after World War II, and people were on the move. There were different bases that were all over the place, and some of those service people were stationed here, and they thought, well, this is a lot nicer to be here than to be in some cold climate.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
And so everything was moving at that time. The interstate was coming on. Davis-Monthan was expanding in 48, so this was the place to be. All the movies were being made here.
And oh, it's
just
of course.
Like, yeah.
And it was an exciting time to
it
be
was.
In Tucson.
It was a real exciting time.
That's
yeah.
cool. That's It's fascinating to me because I wasn't alive during that time period, and I've been here. I'm 31 years old, so I'm a young guy, but I've been here my whole life, and to think about those times is fascinating because anytime I talk to somebody that was, they look back with a lot of fondness on those time periods, and because it was exciting to be here. Now, we were talking a little bit about World War II, about what was happening during that time period, and there was really unprecedented growth. It was we were an industrial powerhouse after the war, and really what we became was a superpower. Now, what do you think the impact on Tucson was when it comes to that topic in the 1950s? What do you think it did to Tucson in particular?
The migration?
Well, not migration, but I would probably say the fact that everything was growing and moving and expanding at such a rapid pace after the war.
Well, I'm not sure I understand the question.
Oh, sorry. So I'm thinking in terms of just America in the 1950s was growing, and 40s, as we talked about prior to the program. Mm-hmm. It was growing, it was expanding, and we were an industrial powerhouse, right?
Yes.
And people were coming to Tucson. What sort of industries were available for people when they were coming?
Oh, okay, I see what you mean, yeah. Well, it was military, and there was a lot of defense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Hughes came in during that time. Hughes aircraft.
Yeah.
They were trying to get more and more industrial type divisions here. And Burr Brown came in at that time.
Okay.
So what was happening is that during the war, people, or right after the war, factories were just opening up all over the place. And so people were like coming out of the farms and things like that and working in factories.
Yeah.
So that was a
fascinating.
That was a big deal here.
Yeah, and that was and there were factories and there was mass production and stuff
mm-hmm.
like that.
Yeah, that's what we were talking about earlier. That
yeah.
was right after the war. It was like mass production and
Yeah. Of course. So your specialty is downtown Tucson. That's kind of what you deal with a lot. The museum that you curate is downtown. Tell me about what was happening in downtown, and let's move back maybe a little bit more in the 40s, into the 50s, and maybe into the 60s, kind of the timeline for what it looked like, let's say, in the 40s.
Well, it was packed.
Yeah, a lot of people down there, huh?
That's where, you know, the Fox opened up in the 30s, and that was the place to be, was
yeah.
downtown. I have some photos of my mother when she was like 15 years old with her aunt, and they were snapped on the street.
Wow.
And, you know, that was a place you got all dressed up. You went downtown. That's where everybody was at.
So the city center in that time period really, really mattered. It was an important place to be.
Oh, absolutely.
And so I think part of the conversation here is that as people started coming to Tucson and as it started growing, there was definitely different trends in how things were expanding and what and how people were buying and shopping. And last time I was on, we were talking about malls and the growth of malls and all that. What I'm interested in is in the year 1960, Elkhorn Mall opened up, and that had an important impact on the downtown area, did it not?
Oh, yeah. Once the malls started coming in, nobody went to downtown anymore.
Nobody did.
They went straight to the malls.
And some of those
Elkhorn Mall.
Yeah, and some of mm-hmm. those stores that were downtown ended up closing down, and ended up not being there.
Uh-huh.
Talk to me a little bit about the history in that time frame. Was it just barren, and there just wasn't a lot of people down there? I mean, obviously, it was like that 20 years ago when I was a kid. There wasn't that much going on, but was that kind of a dark period, would you say, for downtown?
Well, it was starting to empty out because Tucson kind of was depressed a little bit in 1960 and 1961.
Yeah.
And people were starting to move away from the downtown. And then, except for the people like the people who lived in Barrio Libre, things like where urban renewal actually happened.
Yeah,
that you know they were still there. They still had a vibrant community going there.
Interesting. Now you brought up urban renewal. I want to talk a little bit about that. But I think something that's fascinating about it is that it wasn't something that was happening only in Tucson. It was happening all over the nation. So tell me about the story about that.
Well, it's kind of interesting because when I was working at Sosa Carrillo, which is an 1800s territorial house, I would talk to people from New Jersey, and they'd come in and we'd talk a little bit about urban renewal and how the that whole barrio was totally taken away.
Yeah.
And they'd say, "Oh yeah, the very same thing happened to us." You know,
wow.
it was just during that time the preservation laws weren't there yet. And it was that mass production thing, out with the old and in with the new.
Yeah, and that seemed to be sort of the mindset back then. Part of it, for Tucson at least, that defines us is the architecture and the way of building that we have here in Tucson. The modernist movement was popping up in that time period. Talk to me a little bit about some of that and the impact that has had. Even now, it's still having an impact because people come to see it. But talk to me about the modernist movement as well.
Well, people came to Tucson, and it was like, okay, they expected this quaint little town, you know, people still carrying six shooters and things like that, and then these cool adobe houses and the whole bit.
Yeah.
And then something happened to where they, I guess they longed from where they came from. So then all of a sudden it's like, you know, well, we don't want to live in adobe houses.
Yeah.
And then so things just started changing from there, which is funny because now a lot of people want a territorial architecture.
Yeah.
They want those adobe houses.
Yeah.
So it's like,
they really
wow.
like that. It's kind of fascinating.
Yeah.
And you could probably even say that a lot of those people that want that architecture are people that have come from other places from around the United States, which is
definitely
fascinating.
Yeah.
But I think it might be a mindset, is it not?
Yeah.
It's just the way people probably were a little homesick, especially as we were talking about earlier, there was a lot of mass migration throughout the United States.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let's take a break real quick, and then we can come back and talk a little bit more about the history of Tucson in the mid-century and talk about just some interesting stuff that's happening and compare it to nowadays. This is the Buckmaster Show. I'm Ray Allen, filling in for Bill. We'll be back right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. This is Bill Buckmaster. One of my passions is travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. When I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport, with 6 airlines flying nonstop to 19 destinations and easy one-stop connections. I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient, with competitive airfares, and the best part is there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Check out flytucson.com, travel smart, and fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Summer reading is free and fun at the Pima County Public Library. Visit library.pima.gov to find your next favorite book and browse hundreds of activities and special events just for kids now through July 15th. Dream big this summer. Visit your local library or library.pima.gov to find out how.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show, located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
The Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting from a different perspective. We bring you national stories ignored by the mainstream media. Sources include the Washington Times News Service, Personal Liberty Digest, the National Center for Policy Analysis, the Washington Free Beacon, and the Heartland Institute. It is national news coverage from a different perspective. The Southern Arizona News Examiner. Free subscriptions at soaznewsx.com.
Hi, this is Sean McCluskey, co-owner and designated broker for Rincon Ventures. If you're a rental owner by choice or by accident, and you're looking to hire or change property management companies, consider Rincon Ventures. We employ an aggressive web-based advertising strategy to market your rental. We thoroughly screen prospective tenants and conduct routine property inspections. Our online system gives tenants the ability to pay rent and file maintenance requests instantly over the web. Our owners can use the same system to instantly check on their properties. Call Rincon Ventures at 881-2258 or visit us on the web at rvprop.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. The Buckmaster Show features Arizona newsmakers and more than two dozen Buckmaster Show contributors. Everything from foreign affairs to the arts is on the table and open for discussion, and your calls from one end of Southern Arizona to the other. The Buckmaster Show, weekdays during the noon hour on AM 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice, and we're always on buckmastershow.com.
All right, welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. Ray Allen filling in for the vacationing Bill Buckmaster. This portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, just 3 hours east of Tucson. So much to do in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, like exploring the historic downtown Silver City or visiting the world famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. For complete listings of the many things to do and the great places to stay, visit southwestnewmexico.org. That's southwestnewmexico.org. Well, we're joined now by Julia Ariola. She is the museum curator for the Arizona History Museum downtown, which is downtown at 140 South Stone. They also have other locations throughout the Tucson area, but it's open today, correct?
It is open today. We have limited hours. We're open Wednesday and Thursday from 10 to 4 and on Friday from 10 to 3.
And you're located in the Wells Fargo building, correct?
Yes, right next to the bank.
Oh, right next to the bank. Okay,
yes.
Cool. And we were talking about this a little bit beforehand, but what is the exhibit that you have now on display in the museum?
Right now we have an exhibit called I Am Tucson.
Uh-huh. And what does it focus on?
Well, it's an interactive exhibit in which we ask people to come in and give us their impression of what it was, what Tucson felt for them, what they felt about Tucson when they first got here. So we have different responses from people who have lived here their whole lives, and then people who just came in from Wisconsin yesterday.
Yeah, and what have some of the responses been? They've probably been interesting.
Oh, they have. We've got some whiteboards in there, and some of them have been saying, yes, Tucson is beautiful, but you could use more trees and rivers.
That's funny. On one of the other shows that I run in the afternoon, we had a guy on talking about some people that were moving here for the new jobs at Caterpillar, and one lady was asking if she could have a house next to a lake in Tucson, and he said, no, that's not possible. I'm sorry. some high, lofty expectations for Tucson. What do you plan on doing with all those things that people write? Do you erase them every week, or do you just keep them up there and keep them for later?
We are documenting them. I just take a picture of what's been written on the whiteboard, and then I erase it, and people start all over
again. Do it again. And how long do you plan for the exhibit to be up?
It'll probably be up until the fall.
Until the fall. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And do you know what's coming up after that?
Not sure. I've got a couple things. I've got a couple of
ideas.
No, no, because I've got to run it by the powers that be first.
Well, that makes sense. That's always the difficult part about doing anything in life.
Yeah.
The powers that be, I guess. I did say that we could open up the lines to anyone that wants to call in. 790-2040. That's 790-2040 if you want to call in and talk about Tucson like we were, the history of it in the 50s, 60s, and even earlier if you want to. Now, you were telling me off the air about the urban renewal stuff, and you were telling me about off the air about some of the people that you still meet that are from those neighborhoods that come to downtown Tucson.
From the old neighborhood, yes.
Yeah.
They would come into the Social Career Fremont House every once in a while, and they were definitely from that neighborhood.
Yeah.
Well, they're elderly now, so they send their children sometimes.
Yeah. Now, where is the house located again? I'm pretty sure I've been
it
there.
It is on the middle of the Tucson Convention Center. It's just south of the Music Hall.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like anything else there, of course.
Of course.
The TCC is all... modernism.
Yeah.
So, and then here's this territorial house that's just
right in the middle,
totally out of context.
In fact, I remember taking field trips when I was in elementary school, and we would go and we'd go through the house and see the adobe and stuff, and it was always fascinating. But what was the borders of that neighborhood in that area?
Let's see. I think it was Cushing on the south side, and Stone, and Congress, and Maine.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
And what are some of the people, you were telling me that there's definitely still some hostility there when people come to visit and talk to you, huh?
Oh, yeah. People are still angry.
Wow.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And that's, what, 60 years later?
Yes.
Wow. Interesting. Tell me about what goes into curating a museum. What exactly do you do at the museum? I know that there's a lot of work that you end up doing, and what does it take?
Well, actually, what I do
is
I take care of the collections. That's been part of my position.
Yeah.
But the biggest part of my position, which has always been a lot of fun, is interpreting exhibits.
Oh, really?
Yes. And I come up with a plan, a concept, and then I do my research.
Yeah.
And then I go to the main museum downstairs, where in the basement where all the artifacts are kept.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like a kid going into a candy shop.
That's something
you
really love.
Oh, yeah. So, this will work.
And yeah.
Put all this together. Of course, it's a team effort. It takes quite a few people to get an exhibit together. And,
of course.
Yeah. At the end, when we're laying out the cookies, yay.
That's very, that's cool. It seems like it's a pretty fun job.
It is a fun job, yeah.
And how long have you been working at the museum again?
I've been working at the museum for 18 years.
Wow, that's a long time.
I know, that's a long time.
Well, you know, that sounds really fun to me. Well, I want to thank Julia Ariola for being on the show today. Again, tell us the different locations of the museum around Tucson, museums.
We have the Fort Lowell Museum, which is on Glen and Craycroft, the whole Fort Lowell Park.
Yeah.
We are at one, Downtown Museum is at 140 South Stone.
Mm-hmm.
Social Career Fremont House is on the Tucson Convention Center, just south of the Music Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And then our main museum is 949 East 2nd Street.
All right, well, great. So we're going to go to commercial break right now. Thank you so much, Julia, for being on the show. If you'd like to visit the museum, you can. It's exciting and I'm sure a fun time. We'll be coming back on the other side of this break with postal inspection and how you can protect your mail and how you can be safe out there in this crazy world. Ray Allen filling in for Bill. Talk to you later after this.
Tucson now has its own Creole restaurant, named after the classic New Orleans cocktail. Sazerac Creole Kitchen and Cocktail Parlor is located in St. Philip's Plaza at River and Campbell. The New Orleans-inspired menu includes a full range of gumbos and much-loved beignets. See you soon at Sazerac, open daily, 8 a.m. to midnight at St. Philip's Plaza. This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Next time you book a flight, type in T-U-S. Travel smart and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. The Regional Transportation Authority and its members are working together to deliver transportation improvements to our region. More than 770 improvements have been completed to date. The success of the RTA is built upon collaboration and leadership that focuses on addressing our regional mobility needs to make our region a safer, more efficient, and more vibrant place to live. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
Hi, it's Suzanne Miller from your Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona, here to remind you to start with trust and look for the BBB accredited seal when searching for a product or service. Did you know you can request a quote directly from any of our accredited businesses? With over 3,000 accredited businesses in Southern Arizona, you will find a business you can trust. Whether you need a product or service from one company or an entire industry, go to tucson.bbb.org and start your search today.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
And welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. Ray Allen filling in for the vacationing Bill Buckmaster. This portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Green Things, located at 3384 East River Road, just west of the intersection of Dodge and River, just west of Randy Fenton Park. You want to check out Green Things. It's 13 acres. They were smaller and they grew to 13 acres. Bill loves visiting Green Things. You should too for all your gardening and green things. For more information on the web, go to greenthingsaz.com, greenthingsaz.com. Well, is your mail safe? That is an interesting question that we continue to ask. So What we're going to do here is talk to Daniel Grossenbach, who is a postal inspector working with the post office. And really, we were talking off of the air here. You're a federal agent, is that correct?
Yes, a federal agent with the United States government under the Postal Service.
So, you work for the feds, and what does a normal day look like for you as a postal inspector? And is postal inspector the right term, would you say?
Yeah, postal inspector, it's an older term and most commonly used in Europe or other places.
Yeah.
But here you'll hear special agent for the Secret Service, FBI, DEA, the other big agencies.
Now, that sounds a little bit more fun than postal inspector, if you ask me. Special agent.
Right. Well, at least it's unique. Postal inspector, there's only a few of us.
Yeah, there is only a few. So you're in a small fraternity of people.
That's right. That's right. To answer that question, though, is almost impossible, right? Because it's different every day. So people don't realize how many things there are involved with the mail. It's still a critical part of your life and how we communicate, how we get goods, how we get our bills. Although a lot of people do online billing, it's still hard to get away from documents in the mail that people want.
It is. It really is. You know, I'm a younger guy. I don't use the mail all the time, but there is always that time where I've got to mail something, and it's important.
That's right.
So what does that normal day look like for you? Do you just inspect mail, or
that's the first response, right?
Yeah, right.
Is inspect. What are you inspecting?
Yeah.
Well, it's, as I said, a term for investigator or a detective, as most people would understand. And so there's all sorts of things that we investigate. So you could be getting a solicitation in the mail that turns out to be totally fraudulent, and then you end up getting out of your money. You could go to your mailbox and it's empty because you're a victim of mail theft. Or there could be something dangerous in the mail, a threat to somebody, or something physically that can hurt them. These all are extremely rare. But the thing is, the mail is such a trusted service in this country still, that the criminal minds have exploited that. Because when you get something paper in the mail, you tend to trust it more, and you have it personally delivered in a way that you may not something online or anything.
It's almost like the sunrise sunset. You just it's the sun's going to rise and the mail's going to be there.
Right, that's right. Yeah, your mailman will get there.
Yeah,
6 days a week.
One way or another, rain,
right.
Sleet, you know, the
that's
whole
right.
thing. What's that saying? I don't know. Not Norm, but the other guy from Cheers used to say it all the time.
That's right.
So let's kind of start out with the basics. You mentioned some of those things, but what are the most common mail scams that people encounter these days?
Yeah, there's a few of them, and they come in different stripes, but there's really, to keep it simple, I'll give at the end a general rule to follow. The first one would be a charity scam. So whenever there's a big disaster or a big significant event, there's legitimate charities out there. Well, there's also illegitimate ones as well. So you're going to have people that are going to be exploiting that once again to take advantage of the opportunity. So with the earthquake in Haiti or the tsunami years ago, there's charities that pop up. So we want to be able to give to reliable, well-established charities so you know your money's getting somewhere. Another one is a lottery scam. So you'll be asked to give some money to be able to get the big prize.
Yeah.
And that general rule I said is looking out for things that are too good to be true, and especially having to pay any money up front for anything should be a red flag. So don't give out any money ahead of time. If you won something, the money should be coming the other way
to
you.
Exactly, right?
Another thing that's really heartbreaking for me is, no pun intended, but it's called the sweetheart scam. So it's something where the bad guy, usually overseas, will try to reach out to someone here locally and try to woo them in an online chat room or maybe through the mail or the phone, but eventually start sending them things like credit cards to use to buy goods illegitimately and then send it back to them.
Oh my gosh.
So I've had people show up when I was working in LA at LAX on a couple occasions waiting for the flight from Nigeria to come in, and she only to be disappointed that her boyfriend wasn't coming.
Oh no.
I had one here in Tucson who, it was a very American sounding name, but it turned out to be a scammer overseas.
Yeah.
And when I asked her about it, she didn't want to admit it, but eventually wept and broke down crying, saying, "We were supposed to be married."
Wow.
And it's heartbreaking. And it's normal people this happens to.
Yeah. So in the process of an investigation, when do you get called in? They report it to somebody, and then they report it to you. What does the flow of information look like?
Great question, Ray. And it's almost always the police department or the sheriff's department here at Pima County or Tucson Police Department or wherever the local areas that we cover in southern Arizona.
Yeah.
And that's just because that's what people know. And sometimes we get calls directly. We've got a hotline for basically anything mail-related. It's 1-877-876-2455. or 877 US mail, and then the number 5. And that's there's a couple reasons to call that number first. If there's anything that you deem hazardous that you think might be contained in a box or a letter that could hurt you, the fire department does very good at what they do, but they also are quick to, out of an abundance of caution, shut down and maybe even lock you out of your house or shut down the business. So if you call us, we have all the tools and the equipment, and I'm personally trained to be able to go in there with the protective gear and all the tools to be able to test to see if that's something that's hazardous.
And
so that's
the service
we provide. That's right.
Interesting. Now, let's talk a little bit about mail theft. You were saying, you know, the mail's going to be there, What happens one day when the mail's not there?
Yeah, you know, we almost always have something in the mail, right?
Yeah.
There's so much mail, business mail, personal mail. You're going to get something on most days.
Yeah.
And if you have a experience where you go to your mailbox and there's nothing there, that may happen on occasion. But if it's a couple days in a row where you see something else suspicious, you would want to contact us as soon as you can. The way to really prevent that, though, is to get your mail right away.
Yeah.
A lot of the same crooks who go to steal mail are going around checking unlocked car doors or, God forbid, your front door.
Yeah.
They're opportunists. They're going to go and take what's there because they're seizing that opportunity. So you take that from them if you get your mail as soon as you can.
Interesting. Now, on this topic, of course, e-commerce is something that's happening all the time. More and more people are getting things delivered through Amazon and all that. And so have you noticed people stealing mail off of front porches, like packages?
Oh, absolutely.
The
irony of what you're saying is most people say, oh, the mail, who's using that anymore? I go online. Well, what is coming to you when you go online to Amazon, for example?
Yeah.
And that does happen. As the parcels increase, there's over half a billion pieces of mail every day that's processed. So calculate that out over time. The odds are something may go wrong, and that is a criminal element may get onto your porch and take that box.
Wow.
Well, there's ways that we have to work with our local law enforcement partners and also to investigate that to try to get the bad guys. And I've had success doing that.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So tell me what success looks like. I mean, you're involved in an investigation. How long does it take to find somebody? What goes into that? That's what fascinates me.
Depending on that, and it fascinates me too. And it really depends on the nature of the case. But we'll stick with if there is a theft of mail.
Yeah, sure.
Sometimes there's tips from people who know somebody who's doing something bad.
Yeah.
There are a lot of witnesses in the public, the postal employees. We have a lot of people that have the ability to be able to witness something. There's a lot of cameras now. There's doorbell cameras. And I had a case where we could clearly see the person who went to ring the doorbell and then picked up a parcel and walked out. And he's now in jail.
That's great.
There's different things like that. We also work with our law enforcement partners. As I mentioned, they could be stopped on a traffic stop and have some belongings with them or be on record at a pawn shop selling something.
Interesting.
Something like that.
Now, I think there's another end of mail protection that's kind of like the opposite side, where you don't want to throw away mail that contains sensitive information, right?
That's right.
So talk to me a little bit about disposing of mail, disposing of things that you receive. How do you know when you should dispose of something?
Yeah, and a lot of businesses and governments are, and there's legal reasons for this. They're required by law often to not include specific information on your mail.
Yeah.
So your information could be other places other than the mail. So it's a good practice just to really shred anything that has that information on when you don't need it or keep it safe until you do need to dispose of it. Because with a few pieces of information, a social security number, date of birth, your identity can be compromised, and we investigate those quite a bit too.
Really? Now, identity theft is also something that's very huge and is a problem because of the internet and everything like that. So does someone just pick up a piece of your mail and they say, oh, here's the social, and what do they do to go about stealing your identity? How does that work?
Well, there's a variety of different ways. Typically, the bad guy will have a certain routine that they're familiar with. They will do a number of different things that I go into too many detail, this will become a different kind of show, a how-to.
We don't want that.
That's right. But the point being is if you have personal information, whether it's on your mail or elsewhere, you want to really safeguard that because we're not always in the mindset that the criminal is in.
No. Right?
They're thinking, how can I really exploit this? How can I take this person's identity and make money or have some advantage from that?
Yeah.
So we have to almost think like the bad guy.
Exactly. That makes sense. Now, let's just reiterate for people listening out there. if they want to report mail theft, what number do they call? Where can they go? Can they do it online?
Right, and they can do it online. If you go to USPS.com, at the very bottom you'll see postal inspectors. Yeah. Click on that, and then it'll get to us. Or the number I mentioned, 877-US-MAIL-5, the number 5. That'll give you all these different, if you have something dangerous in the mail, if you think you've got something fraudulent in the mail, if you think you're a victim of mail theft. I personally investigated along with several others at our office, so it gets to us. It sounds like a 800 number that goes nowhere, but that is our central processing of complaints, and we build our cases off of that. So I encourage people to call there.
All right, so we're going to take another break here real quick, but when we come back on the other side, I kind of want to talk about, terrorism is in the news all the time, and I think that's an aspect of it that is kind of the scarier aspect, but getting things in the mail that could harm you.
Yeah, sure.
What does that look like? How do you prevent that stuff? And is there a way to prevent it? It's the Buckmaster Show. We're talking about mail theft with our friend here, Daniel Grossenbach, the postal inspector. We'll be right back after this on the Buckmaster Show.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here. Summer reading is free and fun at the Pima County Public Library. Visit library.pima.gov to find your next favorite book and browse hundreds of activities and special events just for kids now through July 15th. Dream big this summer. Visit your local library or library.pima.gov to find out how.
The Regional Transportation Authority works with its member jurisdictions, the business community, project neighbors, and the broader community to deliver transportation projects promised in 2006. This collaborative effort is a model of diverse interests coming together for the benefit of the region. This spirit of regional collaboration helps us address the mobility and safety needs in all of our communities. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
It's a land and cruise vacation sale at Bon Voyage Travel. Plan your dream vacation now and save big, up to 65%. Alaska, Hawaii, Europe, South America, the Caribbean, pick your perfect destination. Bon Voyage Travel will create your exclusive getaway that includes extra perks and bonuses you won't find anywhere else. Call Bon Voyage Travel today or visit bvtravel.com.
The excitement is building for the grand opening in 2017 for the Twisted Tandoor. The legendary Indian food truck will now have a permanent brick-and-mortar home at Swan and Camp Lowell Drive. The menu will be an expansion of the Indian classic offerings from the original Twisted Tandoor food truck. The Twisted Tandoor, coming in 2017 at 4660 East Camp Lowell Drive.
Thank you. And welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. Ray Allen here filling in for the vacationing Bill Buckmaster. You've got 12 minutes more of me, then Dan, and then Bill's back Tuesday. They have a best of on Memorial Day, so be sure to tune in for that as well. 1030 KVOI, The Voice, joined in studio by Daniel Grossenbach, the postal inspector here in Tucson, Arizona. When we took the break, I said that I wanted to talk a little bit about stuff that's in the news, and in the news kind of all the time, unfortunately, is terrorism and even some domestic terrorism. Talk to me about protecting yourself against getting things in the mail, biochemical bomb kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Is there a way?
Yeah, well, yeah, there certainly is. And I'd like to first preface it by saying out of the, as I said, there's over a half a billion with a B pieces of mail processed every day.
Yeah.
And so your odds of it happening are extremely remote. Your odds of anything dangerous getting to your mailbox is extremely remote.
Of course.
In 2015, in fact, it's been decreasing. So in 2015, out of the 44 reported incidents of IEDs or like possibly explosive devices, they were all benign. They were all either hoaxes or false devices.
Okay.
And then, you know, we had, as you mentioned, domestic terrorism. We had a hand in the Ted Kaczynski Unabomber case back in the 90s. And back then, there were occasionally we would hear of a bomb in the mail. But even then, it was incredibly rare. It hasn't happened for a while. And it, like I said, it's decreasing. What's really on people's minds is the anthrax attacks from 2001.
Yeah, tell me about that. What you were telling me off air that you had some people that were working that case present to you all the details there. What exactly happened?
Well, that was a case that wasn't fully resolved. The primary suspect committed suicide before he was charged. So it didn't have an official resolution. Mm-hmm. So I can't speak too much about, you know, how that ended other than that he was no longer a threat and there was no other suspects. So since then, there was you could imagine, an awareness that really peaked. And a lot of postal employees and general public were extra sensitive to any sort of white powder or anything that could be threatening. And again, that was exploited by some criminal minds. And so since 2001, out of the 67,000 suspicious mailings that were reported, there were none that contained anthrax and that they were all hoaxes or false alarms, much like the bomb example I gave before.
Yeah.
But 1,400 suspects were arrested because that's still illegal.
Yeah,
there's
it is
a federal illegal. Charge to send a hoax to cause distress for somebody intentionally by threatening them or sending them something dangerous. So we respond to those even if it is a hoax.
Yeah, and so what does the prosecution look like of a hoax? What is the penalty for that?
Well, the penalty, I believe, is up to 20 years in federal prison and a $250,000 fine. And usually that accompanies other federal or state charges, too. So somebody's in a lot of trouble if they send something that is either threatening or, God forbid, harmful.
Yeah, so it's a serious crime. I mean, you can't just this isn't just something you mess around with.
That's right. And we rely, again, on the public for that. There's a reward we offer up to $100,000 in cash.
Wow.
If you give information leading to a conviction of somebody who's doing this kind of thing.
Wow.
We had something in Tucson just in 2014 where we had somebody sending out threats to preschools and women's health centers and I think the Hispanic Chamber. There's some other targets that were sent letters that were threatening. And we got a successful arrest out of that and put a stop to that pretty quickly in partnership with our sister agency, the FBI.
Fascinating. Yeah. That's incredible. Now, I want to talk a little bit. We've got about 8 minutes left. So I want to devote a little bit of time to the postal inspection unit or whatever you would call it, department. What does it look like? In Tucson, how many are there? And in all over across the United States, what does that look like?
Sure. It's a pretty flat agency. The United States Postal Inspection Service, headquartered in Washington, D.C., is underneath the Postal Service. So you have other agencies like the FBI under the Department of Justice. Mm-hmm. We're under the Postal Service. But we have the same level of authority to arrest, to enforce about 200 federal laws relating to the mail. And so we are federal agents in the same regard as those other agencies. agents. We're a little bit smaller, although we are bigger in terms of all of the federal agencies.
Yeah.
There's more than you know of, like the Department of Forestry or the Department of Agriculture, rather, or Department of Education. They all have their own little agencies. So we're bigger in that regard. But we have, in every big town, there's postal inspectors that handle the kinds of crimes we discussed here. And we cover every piece of ground in the United States and Puerto Rico. And we have some presence overseas. And we are putting someone, I understand, in Jamaica now to combat some of the lottery scams that are going on. So we're going to have somebody there on a permanent basis.
Interesting. So it's not even going to just be only in the United States.
Oh, that's right. And we have somebody in Interpol in Europe as well. So we have international details and try to make an impact.
Yeah, what's fascinating about this is it's not something that I think about on a daily basis. You're saying that everyone relies upon the mail. I rely upon the mail. But it's not something that goes through my mind that there are people out there inspecting this all the time and that there's actually a department devoted to it. But when you really sit down and think about it, wow, there's a lot of mail going everywhere every day, and it seems necessary, and it is necessary.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, people, I think, like anything else, you take it for granted. It's part of life, but when something goes wrong,
that's when you really get
need
upset.
Something, and that's why we're there. In fact, if we have a traffic stop and there's a bad guy who is stealing mail, there is no way to prosecute that other than a misdemeanor theft charge for the value of that piece of paper. But for the United States government has a federal statute for even attempting to possess stolen mail can get up to 5 years in federal prison.
Wow.
So, and I've seen it happen. So that's where we come in, and we can add some value.
That's interesting. You're telling me that there's a show about this?
Yeah. Just a few years ago, they started a real, actual Hollywood-produced drama. It started with forfeiture funds, I believe, is how they funded it. So when you take money from the bad guys, the drug dealers or the fraudsters, they used that for public education, and they made these videos on these different scams we're describing and to educate the public. And then that evolved into an actual show. So every Saturday morning at 8:30 on CBS, so here it's, I think, Channel 13, what we're trying to tell people is this is a great way to maybe elderly parents or other people that are vulnerable typically to scams to watch it with them. It's a little more of a fun way to explain it than just describing it.
Yeah.
And
maybe not nearly as fear
Right, exactly. And it would be a little bit of fun. You watch it with them and can talk about some ways to prevent that happening to you.
That's definitely fascinating.
Sure.
Kind of in the remaining minutes that we have here, I want to just go over the basics again for people that may just be tuning in. The number to call, kind of the what to do, what steps to follow. So let's start with the steps to follow. What would you say is the basics for protecting your mail?
Yeah, if we're talking about your mail and you're concerned about not being a victim of mail theft, as we all should be, the easiest way to do it is to make sure you get your mail right away.
Yeah.
And that is taking it out of the mailbox. The other thing is if you notice your mail is not there for a few days, you may want to check with your letter carrier or the post office to see if somebody else may have put a hold on your mail. When you go on vacation, it's a service that we provide, the Postal Service provides, so you can put a vacation hold just temporarily.
Okay.
And so you get control of your mail. Have a neighbor pick up your mail when you're not around. It's hard. People work all day long. I work all day long. I'm working right now.
That's right.
So
yeah.
I need to rely on my neighbors as well. So as you mentioned, destroying things with your personal information on it's real important, and really just reporting it to us.
Yeah.
Because a lot of this, our investigations can be reactive. We can get good leads if the bad guy's using your information, and that helps.
What's that number again? The website again?
Yeah. The website, just go on simply to USPS.com, and then at the bottom, very bottom, you'll see in small print, postal inspectors. Click on that. That'll get you everywhere you need to be online. And the number 877-876-US-MAIL-5. Is the number to reach us for really anything involving crime in the mail.
Interesting. And then another one that I saw here was don't send cash in the mail. You want to get a secure check from your bank, right?
Right. And some of the tips are a little common sense, but I think if you send cash, there's no accountability or way to really get that back if it goes missing for whatever reason.
Does. So, interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Daniel Grossmuck, I really appreciate it. We've been talking about protecting your mail, and then Daniel does a good job here in Tucson of inspecting your mail. So, again, if you want to call in, you have an issue about mail theft, 877-876-2000. 877-876-2455, 877-876-2455. So this has been the Buckmaster Show. I'm Ray Allen, filling in for the vacationing Bill Buckmaster, as I said, who will be live on the air again on Tuesday after the Memorial Day holiday. This afternoon, be sure to tune in to the other show that I'm on the other side of the glass with. That's going to be Mike Check with Mike Shaw. He'll be having some crazy critters crawling all over him from the Desert Museum, so that one should be fun. And then tomorrow morning, Wake Up Tucson is 6 to 9. They'll be coming to you live from Hacienda del Sol. Live from Hacienda del Sol. It should be a fun remote for Chris out there, so come check that out. And then Bill Buckmaster Show will be back tomorrow with Dan Shear and the Friday Roundtable right here on 1030 KVOI The Voice. Be sure to tune in for that. And be sure to tune in to the Michael Medved Show coming up after this. Daniel, thanks a lot for being on the show. Talk to you later.
This is Michael Medved. Stay tuned for more Intelligent Talk on AM 1030 KVOI, Cortero, Tucson, The Voice.